KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
You're tuned in to KAEB, 91.9 on your FM dials, playing you the hits from yesteryear, this year, and the next.
Hey to all you fish enthusiasts out there, whether you're an avid angler or just curious about fish, we'd like to welcome you to Fish of the Week, your audio almanac of all the fish. It's Monday, February 10th, 2025, and we're on a week-by-week tour of fish across the country with guests from all walks of life. I'm Katrina Liebig with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and my co-host is Guy Uro.
And this week, we're going to be diving into a specific genus within the armored suckermouth catfishes, looking at the janitorfish, the sailfin catfishes, genus Pterygopleictes. Pterygopleictes on three. One, two, three. Pterygopleictes. You didn't say it.
Now I know what you're doing. I'm not going to say it correctly either, probably. Okay, I'm ready.
One, two, three. Pterygopleictes.
Woo!
Sailfin, armored mouth, sucker mouth, catfishes on three. One, two, three.
Oh, wait. Say it again. Sailfin,
armored sucker mouth, catfishes.
Okay. Do it.
One, two, three. Sailfin, armored sucker mouth, catfishes.
Catfishes. Woo! And no guest for this one. If you tuned into our knife fish episode last season, this one is going to be a bit of a similar vein to that one. Before we jump in, we did get some requests, Guy. So I'm going to read off some questions we got. Eric wants to know how the pleco jerky market is doing as a creative solution to invasive species management. Tyler would like to know if there's anything they'll bite on and how they've impacted food webs. Cole would like to hear more about the species complex and what species are in the U.S. And Trent wants to know how tough their armor is and if it's sufficiently strong to defeat a gladiator. So we're going to try to get to those throughout the episode. But first, we're going to give you all a little bit of insight into how we're going to approach this episode. Because if you've been following along over the seasons, there's a lot of nuances in kind of these catch-all names like pleco. So let's kind of talk about how we narrowed this down from our fish draft when we said we were going to talk about armored catfish, janitor fish, and what specifically we're talking about today species-wise.
Okay, well, this one has been a mess from beginning to end. I'm all mixed around, and from my foray into the literature, it seems like there's a whole lot of confusion there too. So we can talk from a high level with some confidence. Yeah. We're talking about within the family Loricoridae, and that's suckermouth,
it's a huge
armored
family,
catfish.
Right? Huge
family.
Huge, most, like 900 species?
Well, you see, even there, plus. I've seen things ranging from high 600s, low 700s, some in the 800s, some 900 plus. And yep. I think a lot of that just comes from, I guess, two things. One, there's a lot of species out there. There's a lot that are coming from places where, you know, we're finding more both just by
like
doing
now.
Surveys. Yeah. I say we, not me, but the scientific community is finding new species that hadn't been described to science before. And so that number keeps going up. Plus you're doing the molecular technique. So some species that you thought were a single species are being split off into two or more species. Yep. But then you also have the reverse problem. Yeah. Where some things that people would describe as multiple species are actually just different forms of the same species. These are Loricoridae. They're called armored suckermouth catfishes. And you have to say armored and suckermouth to distinguish them from Calyctheidae, which is just the armored catfishes, which do not have suckermouths. That's a completely different family. Whether a gladiator can beat them, I would say probably, but definitely real strong armor that's going to maybe ward off a wading bird like a heron or something like that. Within that, other than the armor and the suckermouths, there's a whole range of diversity of fish.
Within the Loricoridae, let's give a couple of examples of the types of fish that are in there. I found a couple of neat ones. I know you have a neat one that was recently discovered.
Sure. What are some that you found, Katrina?
I mean, I saw one online that looked like an octopus face, basically. It's a bristlenose catfish. They've got these little protrusions coming out all over their head that look super cool. And then the marbled whiptail, I've also seen those are really long, skinny tail, but again, look pretty armored, really neat modeling. Those were two that kind of stood out to me as neat ones in this big group that we're going to be teasing down from.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, no, I found something. Certainly you have ones that are kind of short, stocky, like I said, sort of built like a tank. And then you also have these ones that can be really long and thin or long and flat and thin. Gina's Farloella, for instance, that's one that's super long and goofy and wispy, which sounds weird for an armored catfish. Yeah, the Medusa one you mentioned with all the stuff coming out of its nose. It is crazy. I saw one that's kind of commonly referred to as the punk pleco, which kind of looks like it's got a mohawk going up its face.
Oh.
Immediately you're thinking catfish, so maybe barbels. They did not look like barbels to me. They looked more like hair-like projections, which I don't think that they're going to be actual hair on a fish, but they were odd-looking structures. So the geographic range of these fish, it kind of goes from Costa Rica down all through much of South America, both sides of the Andes too. And so there's this one expedition in Peru where they found several new species. This was stuff published in the news in like November or December of last year. So a fairly new discovery. And there's one cool lurkerid that came out of that, which was the blob-headed catfish. There's one photo that you'll find in all the news articles talking about it with this fish on the street. It's just got a giant bulbous front of the face. And I don't know what that's for. Everything I've read, newly discovered species, they don't know what it's for. I mean, presumably sensory stuff. That's what's going on with a lot of these catfishes, having these appendages on their face. It's a lot of like chemoreception and potentially maybe electroreception. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's super cool. And thinking about like bird beaks again, it's like you can look at these different features and be like, okay, yeah, what are those for?
A lot of these fish within family Lorikeriidae will be given the name pleco. It's a shortening of plecostomus, which formerly was a genus and has since been reabsorbed into Hypostomus or Hypostomus, depending on how you want to pronounce it. I think Hypostomus plecostomus definitely sounds better than Hypostomus plecostomus. But again, how good something sounds doesn't mean that's how you should pronounce it. So I still think that there's a lot of debate about what's going on. So we might see in the future plecostomus become a genus again, but there is the common plecostomus. That's outside of pterygoplichthys, but it is another common armored suckermouth catfish. It does also have a very tall dorsal fin, but it has much fewer rays. It has like 5 to 8 dorsal fin rays, whereas the pterygoplichthys are going to have like 10 or more.
Kind of stepping down as we get into pterygoplichthys, Lorikeriidae is the big family, and we're talking about pterygoplichthys within that. Do we want to talk a little bit about that group and get into some of the more specific ways that they look?
Yeah, sure. So pterygoplichthys, they go by a number of common names. Janitor fish, another common one is the sailfin catfishes. And that name comes from the very large dorsal fin that they have. That's a kind of nice unifying characteristic.
Yeah. And that dorsal fin's really neat. I mean, they can kind of throw that up pretty high standing fin. In terms of the armor plating, I came across a really neat study, Donna Ebenstein. She was kind of looking at the structural, the chemical, just the different properties of the dermal plates of some of the species in pterygoplichthys. There's some differences from your typical lasmoid fish scales, and the structures are more similar to like some of the reptiles and mammals that have armoring. It's kind of like a sandwich-like structure that's lightweight, but provides a tough exterior for these fish. And I don't know if folks have held these fish before, but they feel really neat. I've had them in my tank before, and that armor, I mean, they're like, they're hard. Their exterior, they're really neat to feel. I assume you've held one.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever held a full-grown adult, which these fish can get
big.
Decently big. I mean, not huge for a catfish, but solid. People are used to seeing them in their aquariums maybe being a couple inches long.
Yeah.
You know, I think a full-grown adult's usually somewhere like 18 to 28 inches. Mm-hmm. So big, a couple feet.
I did notice that they have an adipose fin. We talk a lot about salmonids. We just talked about whitefish.
Well, they're catfish, and basically all catfishes will have an adipose fin. I think there's some that have lost it, but that's a trait that we see with a lot of fish that are river dwellers. Salmonids that you brought up, that's definitely one. Another crassiform fishes, things like your piranhas and pacus, your other toothy fishes, tiger fishes, those sorts of things. Those all have adipose fins as well. Smelts, catfishes. Yep. There's also a bunch of deep sea fish that have very small adipose fins, but the big ones, the ones where you see the really big adipose fins, those tend to be on fish that live in higher flows.
Yeah, you know? Okay. Okay. They also have a really interesting stomach. It's highly vascularized, and they can survive in really low oxygenated waters by gulping air, and I guess bring it in there, and then it gets absorbed into the body. So they can actually survive out of water for a long time, which also is interesting when we kind of get into the invasive potential of them and getting moved. And that armor can kind of help them reduce the water loss too out of their body.
They're generally black-ish. Some of them don't have much patterning at all. Most of them, it seems like there's some form of gold adornment on their bodies. Mm-hmm. Can be anything from vermiculations to spots. One other cool physical trait, and it is kind of limited to Loricoreid catfishes, not all of them, but the vast majority of this family, that you don't find in other bony fishes is what's called the omega iris on the eye.
I read about that.
Yeah. So basically what it is also known as an iris operculum. Most fish, you think about humans and mammals, if we're able to change our pupil size, really you're changing the size of the iris based on how much light's around. Fish, for the most part, can't do that. There's some species like eels, I believe, that are able to kind of do that. But this has an interesting thing shape. They call it the omega iris because it kind of looks like an upside down Greek letter omega. And so it's kind of this like flap on the iris. I don't think flap's the right word, but it is this piece of the iris that moves down. So it's not as though the whole pupil is shrinking or expanding. It's that it kind of goes from being like a circle with a little indentation in the top when it's most open to just being kind of this crescent that is open at the top when it is most closed in the brightest light conditions. And I've heard one theory espoused about that suggests that it's for camouflage, because these fish do have these sort of weird vermiculated patterns on it. It's kind of hard to make out what's going on. And so possibly an eye on the head could help you.
Stands out.
Yeah, he's like, okay, this is where I'm going to direct my attack. And so by having that pupil not really be the shape of an eye on a typical fish makes it harder to figure that out. It's hard to prove definitively anything related to the evolution of color patterns in fishes. That seems like a reasonable enough hypothesis to me.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm going to introduce a new word. Have you heard of reffling before?
I read it this afternoon. I was having a little bit of a tough time. I can see that it's an interesting form of movement that still looks like it's sort of flopping around in a direction for me.
Yeah.
You got any more insight on that?
I actually found a really neat article that kind of summarized this research basically on this cool movement that these fish can do on land by Matt Miller, who we've had on the show before. So it's a word that was invented specifically for how armored catfish move on land. And apparently the first choice was flooping, but that word already had been taken. So these fish, they do kind of have a flat underside where they can stay upright. Like if you put, say, a salmon on land and it flops around, it's just on its side flopping. But these guys are staying upright. And shout out to Matt Miller, who's got a great article online summarizing the research that's gone into understanding this form of locomotion. There's this guy named Noah Bressman, and Noah, it would be super cool to have you on the show at some point, maybe to talk about walking catfish with us. But sounds like he's a really kind of niche expert on fish that move on land. So he tested this locomotion in 4 Loricoreids, including 3 species in the Pterygopictes genus that we're talking about. There's like a special arena. It looked like it was about maybe 3 feet across, white with like a blue kind of plastic surround where the fish can't flop out of the arena. Basically, they put a fish in there, one of these armored catfish, and it starts to move. So they found they can move in bursts of about 1 meter per second, which is fairly fast. I mean, they can't keep that pace up. That's like a little over 2 miles an hour, I think. So they can't sustain it, but I was really impressed with that speed. And if you look at like a snakehead or walking catfish, you know, they're a little bit softer looking, more flexible. Because these fish are armored, they're a little bit more restricted in their movements. So they've evolved this like ruffling motion, and it looks like they're just kind of flinging their tail back and forth, but apparently the mouth is involved, as well as some other fins like the pectoral and pelvic fins. And the analogy they offered is that it's kind of like a kid on a swing set, how you swing and pump your legs to get higher using inertia. So the tail is kind of acting like that. It's actually not touching the ground when they move. So it's just it's a very interesting movement. Some of the reasons proposed is they're actually pretty prone to being picked up by avian predators. You mentioned a heron. So a heron might pick one of these fish up. Once it figures out it's got this big dorsal fin, it's like super hard. It can't get into it. Sometimes they'll drop the fish and then the fish can kind of scuttle their way maybe into a different canal in Florida or a different area. So it seems like maybe some kind of adaptive behavior with, you know, if they're dropped on land and they're there for a few hours, they can find their way back to water. So I thought that was neat that we got a new term here.
Yeah. And it's worth pointing out too, you mentioned getting dropped on land. So if you're, say, maybe trying to do some invasive species removal and you just throw these fish on the bank, which
don't do
this is me basically citing Matt's article here. Like, best case scenario, the fish does die and then you just got a rotting pile of fish on the bank. So maybe not the best thing to do, but potentially also the fish may be able to get back to where you put in or possibly even get to another spot. Cause like you said, can survive out of the water for 20 hours, can kind of do this reffling behavior. R-E-F-F-L-I-N-G. Am I spelling that correctly?
We keep kind of tiptoeing around invasiveness. So let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, we heard that they're, you know, native to South America. Outside of there, they've been spotted in at least 23 states. Florida and Texas have the most observations. They've got self-reproducing populations there. It's important to talk about this because all these states have their own really cool native species. We know that non-natives can bring disease, especially if they're coming from an aquarium, maybe with other types of fish. And in the case of these armored catfish in particular, they'll burrow into the shorelines and lay their eggs in nests. And apparently the tunnels can be like 3 feet deep. So definitely not insignificant.
There's several species from this genus that have become established in places in the U.S., primarily in southern areas. I believe that there's 4 main Pteragoplictes species that have made it in, and they're all variations on sailfin meaning. There's the Paraná sailfin, the vermiculated sailfin, the Orinoco sailfin, the Amazon sailfin. It's the one that I've heard the most about being established in the U.S. is Pteragoplictes multiradiatus, which is the Orinoco sailfin catfish. And those are the ones that I've seen. You look for those kind of gold adornments over the body.
Yeah. So, I mean, in Florida, so we know that they've been introduced into Florida in the 1950s. And again, this was through aquarium trade. There's dominant species of armored catfish in Florida. There's probably many others. There's tons of habitat and canals. They like to suck onto the manatees and eat the algae.
Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah.
On them. And I guess that can be pretty irritating to the manatees. We don't want those fabulous creatures being irritated or stressed, especially with some of these conditions they're having to put up with cold water and stuff. In Texas, they have reproducing populations of some Pteragoplictes species in spring-fed systems like the San Marcos River, Comal Springs, San Antonio River. Some of these we've talked about in past episodes. Again, aquarium releases there. We know that Texas has some really cool native and endemic critters in those systems. Salamanders, the San Marcos, the fountain darter, the yabuja. And then in some of the Texas rivers, armored catfish actually make up over 50% of the biomass of fish, which is significant. And then in Mexico, they're called Pez Diablo, which means double fish. That name might come from the reservoir where they're first discovered, El Infierno, or because of the general upset that this fish has caused fishermen that go after the native species. It's been released in Mexico to control algae and it's since spread and displaced native species and impacted kind of those artisanal fisheries. So one of the questions we got online, Eric's jerky question, I did a little bit of research and I did find some devilfish fish strips, dog and cat treats, which are basically dehydrated wildcat invasive Mexican devilfish, aka Hypostomus plecostomus. So they're caught by small scale fishermen down there and made into treats. I didn't find much else though. Did you read anything about jerky anywhere?
Not jerky. I've read some other ways that people have tried to eat them. You'll go to some of these canals in Florida and you just look at the bottom and it's just covered with these armored catfish, which I'd be curious how these guys in Mexico are catching them. They just sit there. They're not particularly concerned about you. So it's kind of like a lionfish situation where you can probably kind of just grab them or spear them or gig them pretty easily. And so, you know, being down in these urban areas of Florida, everyone's making YouTube videos these days. Everyone wants to do these catch and cooks. It's like, oh, I bet you we can eat this. And I found some recipes that look pretty decent, both from folks messing around and from people who are reporting it from where they're eating in their native range.
I found some too. So why don't you mention what yours are?
So one that I found is basically kind of like smoking the fish and in a kind of long smoker or like a grill, keeping it on there for several hours, 5 or 6 hours. So basically you would gut the fish first and then kind of put it on there because obviously, you know, you always want to try and gut the fish. Katrina mentioned that really big stomach that they have, and that's like attached to the body wall. So they don't have a ton of meat up front. So most of the musculature is going to be in that tail. And so after you smoke them, then people kind of cracking them open like lobsters and then pulling them up that way. And then I found one from Guyana, which that's down South America. So kind of a native recipe. And it was kind of interesting what they did. So also gut the fish, but then they cut off like the mouth and the barbels and all the fins. And so what you're left with is this armor plated looking fish without the fins, no tail or anything. And then they cook up a curry. I'm not going to tell anyone how to make curries. I'm not great at making curries, but, you know, it's got like coconut milk and all these spices, onions and stuff. And then they will cook for, seems like it's like a half hour, 45 minutes, these fish head on, but fins off in with the curry. Mm. And you're supposed to take them off before the armor starts really peeling off. But then you kind of decase them almost like a crawdad, it sounds like. Mm. Like just pull the back half off and you've got this meat. And so that seems like kind of what they were doing with these smaller ones. So that seemed pretty interesting.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I was looking on ethanvaders.org. You were mentioning gutting the fish, and I was like, man, you know, how would you actually go about filleting one of these fish when I first started looking into this? But apparently there's like a soft spot, like where you spear a dragon or whatever, but there's a lot of specifics on that website on how to fillet. But essentially, once you make a few cuts to open up the flank, you can, quote, pull the fillet off the skin like peeling an orange. And apparently these guys have a high hemoglobin content, which gives them like a firm, hearty texture. We are working on a cookbook called Rough Cuts. So there's a great chapter in there by Daniel Kemp, who's been on to talk about flounder with us before. He talks about the science of taste and texture. So keep an eye out for that later this year. You know, another option is to gut the fish and grill the fish whole. I guess the thick skin traps the juices. And I did come across a couple really good looking recipes there. One was called Pez Diablo Burger and then Armored Catfish Meatballs. So it sounds like there's a lot of different ways to eat these, and it sounds like they're pretty good. So
maybe
we're trying.
It seems like you don't get a ton of meat off of them. So if you're trying to have a meal, probably having quite a few would be the way to go.
You talked a little bit about gigging and nets. I did see a YouTube video, where somebody just kind of reached in and grabbed it with his hand. So I thought that was neat. And then a video on YouTube from some other part of the world, and they were using rice bran powder and kind of mushing it. I guess it was probably moist into like a little ball on a hook. And then he was catching them hook and line that way. So Tyler, to your question about hook and line, maybe playing around with something like that to entice them to bite might be kind of fun.
I did floss one onto my line when I was down in Florida one time. Did not land it. Did not have a net on me. Otherwise, I would have. But yeah. So you mentioned you had them in your aquarium. I know that these are popular aquarium fish. What was your purpose for that?
I had two, actually, and they were a little bit over a foot. It was probably common Placostomus that I had, but their purpose was they look cool and they can also take care of the algae in a tank. I think that's why a lot of people have them in their tank, is for algae control, which is what they do in nature, eating algae. Yeah, neat aquarium fish. Yeah. You can kind of see their mouth moving when they're up on the side, get a good idea of kind of that feeding behavior.
Yeah. So part of the reason for, you know, you've kept them in your aquarium as a cleaner. It's less of the, you know, show fish and more just this functional thing that you have in there that helps keep things clean and pretty for the stars of the tank. Well, this is sort of, you know, the behind the scenes and whatnot janitor of the show. The janitor fish. It's doing the cleaning. But there's some really brilliant looking fish in this family, particularly kind of starting in like the 80s, really took off in their own right as the stars of the show, as fish that folks would really just buy to show off in their aquaria. So a lot of this was going on over in Germany, over in Europe. And so these fish were being, you know, sampled throughout South America and then shipped over there. And they needed a way to try and keep track of it. Taxonomy was not keeping up with the pace at which these new fish were being discovered, given a common name, and sent to Europe. And so there was a magazine over in Germany that basically started assigning them these, what they called L numbers, L for Lori Korea Day. And then there was a competing magazine that also wanted to talk about these things. They're like, well, we can't give them L numbers because that would be, you know, promoting this other magazine and there are competitors. So this other magazine is called Das Aquarium. And so they came up with the LDA number, the L Das Aquarium number. And so you have these two competing lists of L numbers. It seems like the original L number is kind of won out. These are still used today, but it's this weird sort of pseudo-scientific, pseudo-taxonomic categorization that was trying to do sort of the same thing as traditional taxonomy, but faster. And it's interesting. It's kind of running into all the same problems. So basically, you have, like we mentioned at the top of the show, talking about trying to sort these fish out. It's still a problem for people. But yeah, you got all these collectors across the continent who aren't necessarily communicating with each other. And they're sending things out. You have fish that are the same species that look different, they get two different numbers, or you have people who at different places sample the same fish, send them out, and categorize them so you have two numbers for the same fish. So it's just a huge mess. And it's almost like the Germans just ran into all the problems with synonymy and stuff that happened in the two centuries prior with Linnaean taxonomy. They just did it much faster. And ran into the same problems, which was kind of funny. But yeah, so this is an interesting group of fish, though, that within the hobbyist and the aquarium trade, there is this numerical sort of assignation that goes along with the common name and the scientific name that's kind of in between the two.
Yeah, and it's meant to be helpful, right? I mean, so people can kind of get what they want and find a very specific thing, potentially.
The funny thing was, okay, now people are using these numbers and they're sending them to America. But like I said, all this originated with these two feuding German magazines, of which there isn't great circulation, let alone, you know, like being able to get like back orders on old issues to figure out like what has this real number. And so there's Aqualog, which is another publication, tried to put out a thing that unified these numbers for an American audience. And then as they're finding things were splitting out, they started adding like A's and B's. So you'd have...
Oh, no.
The first one was a Pterygoplichthys, though. The gold spot pleco, Pterygoplichthys, Joselimianus. Lang-a-anus. All right. Pterygoplichthys,
Anus.
Ain. Joselimaius.
Yeah. It's interesting. I feel like our episodes, as of late, maybe the last, I don't know, 6 months or so, we've really been talking a lot about taxonomy and how things are organized and how things are getting grouped and ungrouped and regrouped. So it is a kind of interesting times to see all these changes happening. Folks just need to be kind of aware of the naming systems and what these changes are coming from. So yeah, as to the question about hybridization and taxonomy, yeah, it sounds like it's kind of a little bit complicated.
Try and do our best to figure out what's happened over billions of years. Not necessarily within this family, billions of years, but trying to map out the entire history of how life has split itself out. It's not an easy task.
Yep. And diversity is important. So whether or not we can label it, maintaining as much natural diversity as we can is a good goal.
And reducing invasive species.
Yeah.
Stop dumping your fish in places.
Yep. Stop it. Guy, why do you think it's important to cover a fish like this?
Well, the initial reason why it came up, you know, we were doing our draft and we wanted to try and cover some invasive species. And this is a big one, especially down in Florida and Texas. And then also, we don't do a ton in the aquarium trade. We've covered some aquarium fish, but this is one that sort of falls in that wheelhouse as well. So we're talking about from both of those points of view.
Yeah. And I think from a call to action standpoint, this is a great example of one that you can really make a big difference by not releasing your aquarium pets. This one is clearly very popular and can spread in different ways. So think hard when you get a fish and have a plan when you don't need the fish anymore that doesn't involve releasing it into a local water body, especially somewhere where it can really take a foothold. And I think another neat thing about occasionally doing these episodes that focus on a larger group, I mentioned the knife fishes, is just really that first step into thinking about maybe a fish you're curious about and you don't know a lot about. You're like, I like plecos, but it turns out there's a whole lot of diversity that maybe you weren't even aware of. So like taking a group, getting a general understanding. And then, you know, if you hear something on here where you're like, man, I really want to hear specifically about a species that was mentioned, that's when you can start really digging in like we do on most of our episodes to a specific species. But these kind of broader episodes are fun every once in a while just to get a just real general intro to a group of fish that's important or interesting or maybe threatening other fish.
Doing the research on this one, I like, oh yeah, we'll do plecos. It's a cool aquarium fish. There can't be that many. And then I started to look into these L numbers and stuff and realized that aquarium folks just called everything in the like fifth most diverse family of fishes in the world a pleco. And it just got out of hand so fast.
Yeah,
I'm just looking at this. I'm like, what are we actually going to talk about?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we hopefully Tara can flick these. I don't know if we even mentioned how, I think there's like 16 species currently within that one. I don't know if we even mentioned that. We're just like, okay, we got to limit it to something. Do you want to do fan mail darter?
Yeah, let's do fan mail darter.
All right. Folks have been reaching out. We asked in the kickoff episode for folks to reach out to us, let us know what they're interested in. And some folks have really reached out and done that. So now we're
appreciate that. We love it.
Thank you. And so we're going to actually start doing a new segment every once in a while when it's just me and Katrina. We'll do fan mail darter, like fantail darter, but fan mail. It's not the greatest. That can be workshopped. Fan mail is what it is. And so it's not related to necessarily the episode that we just covered. It's what folks have been writing to us about. So what's in the mailbag, Katrina?
All right, let me see what's in the mailbag. So we got some fan mail darter from Scott. And Scott has a question for Guy. He wants to know if Guy's ever tried spey fishing or using a center pin. And Scott also wants to know what Guy's favorite fly is.
Okay. To answer the first two questions, no and no. Of the two, I am more interested in trying centerpin fishing. So centerpin fishing is kind of like fly fishing. You've got this really big reel that's got no drag to it, though. And so folks will use that for like steelhead. I know I have a buddy who does that up in Michigan. So I'd like to go up and see him in Michigan and do some centerpin fishing. Now, spey fishing, I associate that with like over in Scotland and stuff. It's the two-handed fly casting, and it's really cool. If you think standard single-handed fly casting is an art form, like in a river run fluid, go check out spey casting. It is really cool to see. I'd love to try it sometime, but I don't see myself ever getting into that sport as much, but it does seem really cool. As for my favorite fly, there's several ways to potentially answer that question. Is it asking what fly do I use the most? What do I use as my sort of starter searching fly? Which one do I think has the most aesthetic value? Is there any like personal connection to any of the flies? If I only had a single fly, which would I use? So think about that though. My initial fly that I like starting out with, I like a gold-ribbed hare's ear. I'm sure that's in a lot of people's, like, you know, if you have a box of like 5 or 10 flies, that's usually in there, but it is great. It's just a little buggy looking fly. I really do like nymphing. I think it's an extremely productive way to catch trout and other fish. Gold-ribbed hare's ear just kind of mimics a small nymph stage of a mayfly or a stonefly and will work on lots of different fish. If I only had a single fly, I think I'd probably do something like a bunny leech or an egg sucking leech. And a lot of people would probably go woolly bugger there, but I tend to prefer the action on a bunny leech. Just something that's kind of, you know, can look like a leech or a minnow, something that you can strip or something that you can nymph with. So that's a good one. Artistically, silver doctors or variants on silver doctors. Again, these aren't deep dives, deep cuts within the fly fishing or fly tying world, but I think they're the best for a reason. I think that they are really popular because they are the best. But silver doctors are beautiful. I tried my best when I was a senior in high school. I was taking this girl to the senior prom, and so I tried to make my own. What's the wrist feeling?
Not a corset. What the fuck's a
No, that's around the waist. courgette. No, that's a cucumber or a zucchini in Britain.
Let me see. It starts with a
corsage. C. Is it corsage?
No.
The woman bracelet.
The woman bracelet. Oh, okay. Prom woman bracelet. Searching.
A man's is the boutonniere, I think.
That shows how much I care about this. That search term doesn't even work.
What do you search?
Prom woman bracelet.
Prom woman bracelet? Are you using like Bing?
Oh, there it is. Corsage.
I think that's one of the things I said.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay. Corsage. We can edit out a lot of that. It was a corsage. I tried to make one that I was kind of themed off of a silver doctor. I went and spent a bunch of money in a fly shop to get some cool stuff. The thing was, I also decided to leave some real hooks in there, which wasn't the greatest idea. It did get hooked on one of my friend's suits. Not the best. So sorry for that, Caroline. But okay, and so I'll say one more fly. I know this is getting long for a response.
That's funny.
There is one, and I won't spill the details here, but it's like the first fly that I ever designed. It's a super simple pattern. I'm probably not the first one to design it, but I called it a trout slayer. It's the first fly that I came up with that actually has caught fish. Does well for trout. It's a little nymph. It's also what I caught my first sculpin on, so that one has a special place in my heart. So thank you, Scott.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. And I know the question wasn't directed at me, and I don't really fly fish anymore because I just meet fish with the net. But I really did like the shoal bass episode and our guest Fletcher talking about the amazing flies that he makes that look like actual forage fish. And he showed us a few and they were incredible. Cool. Some one to check ones out. Yep. Another question, and we'd love some, I guess, input from folks listening. If anybody knows a potential guest who's carved out a career path in fisheries later in life, maybe after having a first career, we are looking to hopefully feature that perspective coming up for folks who maybe want to get into fisheries later in life and make a positive contribution to fisheries conservation. So if you have any ideas or if that person is you, reach out to Guy and I online. Do we have any other questions, Guy, in here?
Let's see. We had someone reach out. Lisa Johansson reached out to us. She's an author and she wrote a book about blind cats. It's a children's book. I actually ordered a copy and I read it. And it's really good. And it's actually got a lot of cool stuff about the science and the hydrology of these karst cave formations in Texas and on the Texas-Mexico border. It's a fun little journey with talking animals with a tadpole that gets sucked down and then gets guided by this wise older blind cat and returns to another pond. So it is a cool little story. There's not a ton of kids books out there that deal with these troglobitic species and hydrology and stuff. So that's kind of neat.
We've been getting a lot of feedback on just kind of recommendations for future episodes. We got a fan mail darter from Jesse, who's actually a bird nerd. So we're happy to hear that some folks listening out there are bird nerds. We like you guys too. Jesse had some great ideas on some fish he'd like us to cover, including some different sturgeon, kind of getting into some Missouri River Plains ecology, some different Great Lakes fishes, maybe blue walleye, smelts, zander. Jesse said he'd love to hear more about some different catfish. So it's good we actually did this episode, but maybe some mad toms, some stone cats, some bullheads. Anybody knows anything about the deep water sculpin? He thinks that would be a fun one to hear about. So thank you, Jesse, for some of those ideas. Our list is expanding.
And one last one, Bailey from Georgia reached out thanking us for covering the fish ponds on the show. And we've done that a couple times talking about, forget the Hawaiian names. Yes, out in Hawaii. We talked about the milkfish and the moi, the Pacific threadfin. Ava, that's what they call them. Ava. Ava and Moy. So she wrote thanking us for highlighting that. She actually went out and she visited the fish pond. So yeah, we're glad that you were able to check that out, Bailey.
We do want to make this something that people enjoy. So love the emails. If you want to give us a review, good or bad, on wherever you listen to podcasts, that's helpful as well. So appreciate it. Well, get out there and live with, live from, discover, and enjoy all the fish, especially the Tarago pygmies. Woo! Thanks for listening to Fish of the Week. My name is Katrina Liebeck, and my co-host is Guy Arrow. Fish of the Week is a production of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Alaska Region Office of Communications. Our production partner for the series is Citizen Race Car. We honor, thank, and celebrate the whole community, individual tribes, states, our sister agencies, fish enthusiasts, scientists, and others who have elevated our understanding and love as people and professionals of all the fish.
FiberPlus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.
Life is good here in paradise today. It's blowing like crazy today. No rain with it as of yet, but boy, great stuff, isn't it? I had something to say. I can't remember what it was. Must be my age. Oh, yeah, I watched a game yesterday. That was a dandy. I kind of wanted Kansas City to win. I wanted to see him do it one more time. You know, it's kind of a new record and all that, but man. The Eagles played really well. It was quite the show. I really, really enjoyed it. The halftime show, all I can say is, Scotty, beam me up. I mean, it didn't work for me at all. That's mainstream now. Like I said, beam me up. Anyway, I play the stuff once in a while, but I guess I got to cave in every now and then. Let's start with Johnny Horton here with Rock. Rock Island Line. After that, Waylon Jennings with I May Be Yous, But Baby I Ain't. I Ain't Something here. And then George Jones with Don't Stop the Music. All coming down the pike here at you on KSGP Radio. Life is wonderful, isn't it?
Now this here's the story about the Rock Island Line. Now, the Rock Island Line, she run down into New Orleans. And just before we get to New Orleans, why, they got a big toll gate. Where you got to pay the man just some money. Of course, if you got certain things on board, you're okay. You don't have to pay the man nothing. Right now, we see a train. She pulled into the station. Man, he stick his head out the window and he yelled down to me. I got pigs, I got horses, I got cows, I got sheep, I got all livestock, I got all livestock, I got all livestock. The man said, boy, you okay, you're going through, you don't have to pay nothing. So the man he going through. Train get on down away from the station a little bit wide. Starts picking up a little bit of speed. Then starts picking up a little bit of steam. The driver to think he's safely out of sight of the man, so he stick his head out the window and he yell back down the line at the man. Well, I fool you, I fool you. I got pig iron, I got pig iron, I got all pig iron. Now I tell you where I'm going, boy. Down a Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. Rock Island Line is a road to ride. Yeah, the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. If you ride it, gotta ride it like you finally get your ticket at the station at the Rock Island Line. Well, A, B, C, W, X, Y, Z. The cat's on the cover, but he don't see me. Down a Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. Rock Island Line is a road to ride. Yeah, the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. If you ride it, gotta ride it like you finally get your ticket at the station at the Rock Island Line. Well, I may be right or maybe wrong. I bet you're gonna miss me when I'm gone. Now Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. Rock Island Line is a road to ride. Yeah, the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. If you ride it, gotta ride it like you finally get your ticket at the station at the Rock Island Line. Down the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. Rock Island Line is a road to ride. Yeah, the Rock Island Line, she's a mighty good road. If you ride it, gotta ride it like you finally get your ticket at the station at the Rock Island Line.
Well, now, baby, you're a looker, and I know what you're looking for. You've been looking over every man at the bar. Well, honey, I know I got a few years on you. But if you're shopping around, let me tell you a thing or two. Well, I look a little rough and I got a few miles on me. My body needs work and my style ain't what it used to be. And honey, I'll admit this place is where I'm wearing thin. But I ain't broke down, I just couldn't hold again. Well, I may be worn, but maybe I ain't worn out. Let me take you for a ride and I'll show you what I'm talking about. I guarantee that there's a lot of me left to love. Well, I may be you, but maybe I ain't. I've been wrecked a few times, and honey, it's yours, I guess. There's been once or twice that you could say that I was repossessed. There's one little thing that I think ought to be understood. It ain't how you look, it's what you got under your hood. Well, I may be worn, but baby, I ain't worn out. I'm talking about. I guarantee there's a lot of me left to love. Well, I may be you, but maybe I ain't you still.
Check it out.
Don't stop the music, let it play one. one more song, the same one that's played tonight for so long. She's out with another, I saw them tonight, sitting there close together. She knows that's not right. So don't stop the music, let it play one more song, the same one that's played tonight for so long. My pockets are empty, I've spent my last dime, but I've just gotta hear that song one more time. Don't be mad at me, mister, I know that it's wrong, but I want you to hear the words of that song. So don't stop the music, don't make me go home. I know she's not there, and I'd cry all night long. Don't stop the music, let it play one more song, the same one that's played tonight for so long. My pockets are empty, I've spent my last dime, but I've just got to hear that song one more time.
Yeah, I love old George Jones. Coming up now, we have up to the top of the hour. Let's see what we can put in here. Jimmy Rodger with My Carolina Sunshine Girl. David Allan Coe after that with another pretty country song. We might be able to fit one more in. Carol and Don Johnson with Complicated.
Moon, moon, I can see you sinking low. You make me think of a sweetheart, a little girl that I love so. After I've wandered the whole night through, wondering if you think of me. While I'm by my own, some thinking of someone, I'm thinking only of you. My Carolina sunshine girl, you have turned my heart to stone. My Carolina sunshine girl, you have left me all alone. I wonder why I sit and cry when I really should laugh at your photograph, for you're the sweetest angel in this world, and I love, love, love you, my Carolina sunshine girl. Yodel-dee-ah-dee-oh-dee. Sweetest
angel in this world. And I love, love, love you, my Carolina sunshine girl.
I bought this rhinestone suit in California. These boots came all the way from Mexico. This Cadillac ain't nothing, son. You ought to see the Greyhound. I bought to take my band from show to show. Seen my face a thousand times on TV. Heard me on your local radio. And in your eyes I see the admiration there for me. But son, there's something that you ought to know. Well, I've got to take a drink to keep from shaking. Motel pills to stay awake, son. And this diamond ring I wear is just for show. I got a little cabin in the country. When I'm not on the road, that's where I go. Try and put my
into the room, I wanna find a hiding place. We used to laugh, we used to hug, the way that old friends do. But now a smile and a touch of your hand just makes me come unglued. It's such a contradiction. Do I lie or tell the truth? Is it fact or fiction? Oh, the way I feel for you is so complicated. Thank you. control. I think I finally got a grip. Another friend tells me that my name is always on your lips. They say I'm more than just a friend. They say I must be blind. Well, I admit that I've seen you watch me from the corner of your eye. Oh, it's